Republicans in the Utah legislature to Utah's poor, drop dead. This is Senator Jim DeBacchus on the left.
More news of politicians who are hypocrites and don't walk their talk. This is Todd Weiler from the right.
We're talking about education credibility between the legislature and the establishment. This is Greg Bell moderating for both sides of the aisle. And now we'll have news. I'm Greg Bell, sitting in for Natalie Gochner, representing Utah's Common Sense Middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm joined on the left by Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Jimmy on Facebook. And on my right, the esteemed Senator Todd Weiler. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor.
Good to have you both. The neat thing in politics in Utah is that we like each other. We actually get along, right?
I like everybody.
Right. Okay, well, there's a lot cooking. We had the presidential primary debate this week. How did you feel they do? They did.
Look, I loved the contrast. You know, it was hard-hitting. It was serious people talking about serious issues within the limits of dignity. And then you have that poop show of the Republicans. I mean, I just put it out there to the voters. Take a look at Donald Trump and the merry band and look at what happened last night with soon-to-be President Clinton or Sanders and recognize why we can't trust the Republicans to run this country, obviously.
Well, you know, the House has been dealing with this issue. This is, you know, I think the third year by my count. They've never had the votes. They still don't have the votes. I'm actually a little I commend the Gang of Six, the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker, and the Senate president, and their majority leader, and all of that. And Brian, she was out. I commend them for their efforts. But the plan that
moved on to
I'm sorry,
Medicaid.
We were talking about the presidential debate, Todd. Hello? You just off a plane?
Well, I thought you were saying that the Republicans can't be trusted to run the country because of Medicaid expansion failing in Utah.
Boy. Well, I'll stipulate to that.
Hillary did it. Hillary did a yeoman's job last night. I don't think she had a lot of competition on the stage. I listened to her on the radio. I don't know if it was a John F. Kennedy Nixon effect. I thought she sounded shrill on the radio. I'm not a Hillary fan. I'm sorry, listeners. So maybe that it was my own bias, but I don't know if she came across differently on TV, but it was kind of hard to listen to. And my kids commented the same thing, and they are interested in politics. So anyway, but you know, CNN sent me an email that said she won the debate, so she must have. And I thought Bernie Sanders was brilliant on the email thing.
Well, yeah, talk to me about that.
Bernie says, I'm tired of reading about your damn emails. Let's talk about their important issues, which I think was brilliant for Hillary. He says it wasn't a planned, that he just kind of blurted that out. It got a stand ovation from the audience. And, you know, for the, you know, 640 people watching that debate, maybe they agreed. But, you know, they didn't get the ratings that Donald Trump and the Republicans have gotten. And I don't think the email scandal's over, because what she did, there are people in jail for doing the same thing what she's accused of doing.
Well, and I agree. I think that the issue needs to be pursued, right? It just needs not to be so political.
Yeah.
And I think what Bernie is saying is, let's talk about issues.
Yeah.
Let's not just keep talking about
the emails,
this sort of thing. So interesting.
Never count Hillary out.
Never count Hillary
out. She's down on her luck right now. She'll probably bounce back and get the nomination. I'm still waiting to see if Biden jumps in. I think he's really having fun with this.
Yeah, he's a spoiler.
You know, he takes the train every morning from Connecticut to D.C. So yesterday, the morning of the debate, he goes to the airport instead of the train and sets the press in a frenzy. They think, well, maybe he's flying to Vegas. And he flies to D.C. and just says, well, I felt like flying today. I mean, that was not accidental. That was not coincidental. He's playing games, and he likes people talking about him. He leaked his own story about his son's dying wish. I think Joe Biden jumps in this race.
Jim, I'm
not going with this Fox News kind of, oh, he leaked this and that and the other. Joe Biden would be a terrific, amazing president. And the truth is, as a guy who's who sees them during their 22-minute appearances in Salt Lake as they zoom up to Park City to get their
the Democrats? You're talking about the Democrats?
I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans and all of them. They zoom up after they land at Millionaire Airport, and then they get a siren up to Park City where they get at some rich guy's house, and they leave with $500,000, and then they zoom back into the plane and take off for the next place. Having seen a bunch of those, Joe Biden is either the most sincere and articulate of all of them, or he fakes it better, because he up there in Park City was as sincere a human being as I've ever seen. And Secret Service had to pull him away because he just kept talking, and everybody, it was, I like the guy a lot.
He's very likable. He's more likable than Hillary. Interestingly, I read a book by Robert Gates this year called Duty. He was Secretary of Defense under both Bush and Obama. And that book, he really throws Joe Biden under the bus and basically said he'd never met Hillary or Biden before Obama was elected. He said he and Hillary, on every major issue in the first 4 years of Obama's administration, he and Hillary sided against Biden and usually won, you know, Obama's ear. But he said Biden has bad political judgment, bad instincts. But he is likable, good old Uncle Joe. Yeah. And I hear he gives a good back rub if you're a woman.
I have a hard time not remembering the way he treated Paul Ryan in that debate. I thought that was reprehensible.
Yeah.
It was just sniffy. And
speaking of which, Paul Ryan was in Utah last month in late September, and it was not in Park City. He went to a rich guy's house in Bountiful in my district, and I got to meet him. What a great guy. I hope he's
real
the next speaker.
Wonderful human, I agree.
Yeah.
Let's talk more about that. Gosh, the Republicans are locking up again in Congress.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, I think Congress is very reflective of what's going on nationally, and we have this big divide, this fissure in the Republican Party between the establishment and the Tea Party or libertarians or whatever you want to call them, the non-establishment, the far right. And I think that's happening in Utah. I think it's happening in most states, and I think that's what you're seeing in Congress. So this so-called Freedom Caucus with their 40 votes, that was enough to prevent McCarthy from being able to, you know, get the votes he needed to become the new speaker. And I think he had some other issues with some extramarital affairs going on as well. But it's interesting. It was fun to see Jason Chaffetz in the spotlight for a day or two. I don't think Representative Chaffetz is going to be the next speaker, but I think he is a rising star in Congress.
And they floated Rob Bishop.
Rob Bishop. Yeah, I talked to Rob about that today.
Did you?
Yeah.
They must have had a big balloon to float his name.
Hey, Rob Bishop, Jimmy, has lost 60 pounds in the last 14 months. I don't know if you've seen
really?
Him, but he looks great.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, 60, he buys beautiful suits, so somebody's making money on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about locally. We have a burner of a race in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, we do.
This is really fun. I mean, it's exciting for political people.
And
I think the people in Salt Lake are getting excited about it.
And they've
this.
Had 11 debates. I think today was the 10th or 11th. I mean, this week was the 10th or 11th debate on KSL. I heard a good part of it. Jackie Biskupski is the real deal. She has bipartisan support. She served 13 years in the legislature and doesn't have an enemy. I mean, I don't know who else can say. I have enemies. I've only been there 4 years. I think she's leading among likely voters, and that's the key statistic. They're in a dead heat among guy on the street, but among likely voters, she's leading. I think Mayor Becker may squeak out a victory, but I think this is going to be a nail-biter, and she may pull it off.
Jim, the whole lesbian gay community.
But nobody cares about that.
Ralph.
It's not even.
That's not true.
A number of big funders supported Ralph. And I think it just goes to show how big the LGBT community is. You know, there's people that are supporting Ralph, people that are supporting Jackie. And it's not a big issue, at least in a Salt Lake City election. I don't hear anybody saying elect her because she's a lesbian or elect Ralph because he's straight. I think it goes to show how far we've come, at least as a city, and I hope as a state, where that's just off the table.
It's really
not
non-issue.
Even an issue.
Right,
it's not
but,
an
but it is interesting that leadership has endorsed.
Look, Ralph is getting the old-time establishment people, And they're there, and they like the status quo. You get people like Utah Policy that pretend like they're news outlets when really they are just a lobbyist.
Okay, we're going to close her down for a break.
So that's what
to
watch
for. This is Greg Bell with Senator Wyler and Senator DeBacchus. We'll be back.
This is Jim DeBacchus on the left.
This is Todd Wyler, Utah State Senator from the right.
And I'm Greg Bell in the political middle. I'm subbing for Natalie Gochner, who's out of town, a truly intellectual influence in our state and certainly in this program. The average IQ has diminished considerably in Natalie's absence.
Greg, I appreciate you trying to fill Natalie's shoes, but you don't look nearly as good in those high heels as she does.
And the same with you and Greg Hughes, Todd.
Well, let's talk about it. Senator Wyler, you adverted to it in your open, but let's do a postmortem. Jim, let's start with you on Medicaid expansion.
Truly a shameful.
Utah Access Plus, Healthy Utah. What are the other?
Frail Utah.
We've had many iterations. So I know you don't have a big opinion about this, so just take a minute.
I don't ever want to hear out of another person's mouth we're the best managed state. This ruins whatever possibility there was of saying that. The Republican Party simply cannot govern. They are ungovernable. They couldn't get a bill. They yacked and yacked for a year and a half, and then they couldn't get it through the legislature and hired commissions and committees and whatever. Finally came up with a bill, couldn't get it through the legislature. Then they put together a secret group of six Republicans that met behind closed doors for 6 months, came up with something. And what is the result of all this going to be? Those six people who are not representative of the state, they're all white. They are all the same Republicans. Not all of them, I would imagine, make more than $150,000 a year. And they're sitting behind these walls making those decisions, not hearing from the poor people who are desperate for this health care. Finally, they announce it. And do they announce it in front of a hearing to get more input? No, they crawl into the secret House caucus. And they get their opinion. And so now what do we have? Nothing. It was a bad, shameful day for the Utah legislature, for the Republicans, for the Medical Association, for the Hospital Association, for all of those lobbyists that were up there that killed this bill and killed, imagine this, $747 million a year. In another 3 or 4 years would have been Utah's share, and we ripped up the check. We ripped up that check because the Republicans in this state are at war with each other, and they can't figure out how to divvy up the money and a lot of little details. It's a very, very, very shameful day for Utahns.
Senator, how are you calling it?
Well, I tend to agree with some of the sentiments of my good senator friend Jim DeBacchus. I think that Medicaid expansion will come to Utah. I think that this particular proposal is dead, but I think that this issue is not going away. We're paying the taxes. Obamacare is not going to be
repealed.
Explain
that a little, Jim. Well, Jim Rush.
Yeah.
That.
So on January 1st, 2014, a host of new ACA or Obamacare taxes went into effect, and if you total all those up, it totals over $600 million a year that Utahns are paying. Some of that is taxing on insurance policies.
These are new taxes.
New Obamacare taxes.
This is not just general income
taxes. No. These are federal taxes.
And these are specifically ACA-related taxes.
And there's a federal sales tax, which we've never seen before in this state, on medical devices. And so we're shipping $600 million a year in new Obamacare taxes back to Washington, D.C.
Every year?
And every year, so over $600 million. And we're not getting our full bang for that buck. Now, some people say, well, we're in deficit spending, so it's not really. But these are new taxes that were designed to help our working poor in the state. We're not getting the full benefit from that. So Utah was one of the last states to actually adopt Medicaid back in the 60s when it came on board. We may be one of the last states to adopt Medicaid expansion. I think it will happen because Obamacare is not going away anytime soon. And the Republicans can't even agree on a speaker in Congress, much less a replacement plan. But this particular plan, I don't think I liked it less than some of the other plans I've seen. And I don't want to throw everybody under the bus, but I want to take issue. We had a public process for 2 years and they couldn't have a deal. I don't have a problem with these guys meeting behind closed doors to try to work out a deal because everything was going to be done in open doors. Here's where I think they failed, Greg. They didn't come up with a bill. They came up with a concept paper, and the concept had weaknesses like taxing doctors, this Medicaid tax, even if they didn't see Medicaid patients. The original concept was you're going to tax volunteer doctors who are mostly retired. Some of those tweaks could have been worked out. I think if they had a bill, and I think if they had a speaker and a majority leader in the House that was willing to twist arms and whip up votes, which they don't have for whatever reason, and maybe that's Greg Hughes' leadership style, maybe that's his legacy. But I'll tell you, if we had a different speaker in days past who was behind this, we would have seen something passed by now.
What do you think about his ruling that he wanted 38 Republican votes?
I think it was a huge mistake to say that publicly. And
explain what that means. Well,
we have 75 House members, and in order to pass a bill in the Utah House of Representatives, you have to have 38 votes. There's 12 Democrats. So what Speaker Hughes, who I like and consider a friend, he announced that if he doesn't get 38 votes from the Republicans, he's not going to bring it forward to the floor, which means with the Democratic votes, it would have been 50 votes. You only need 38 to pass. So it's one thing to...
So a two-thirds majority, right?
Yeah. And so I think that people don't like this scene, behind closed doors, closed caucuses, and not having public vote. I think they ought to bring it out. They ought to have a special session. They let it have another floor debate on this new proposal, have whatever amendments, and let people vote it down. That's what they did last session, even though they didn't want to. But it is a little bit politically arrogant to come out and say, if we can't get all 38 votes from the Republicans, we're not going to play ball with the Democrats. I think that was a huge mistake politically for Greg Hughes because it makes him look partisan and a little bit petty.
Okay. Let's talk education.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You're the head of the Hospital Association. Are you going to get by without giving your 2 cents on what you think about what happened?
The hospitals have been willing to
pony up,
be serious funders of this program.
$25 to $30 million.
A year ago, we're the only group that came out and said,
Colorado put a tax on hospitals. The hospitals are the biggest beneficiaries of this.
Well,
their uncompensated care is going to be in the hundreds of millions.
We are about 30% of that spend, and there's about $300 million of uncompensated care rendered in the state of Utah, including bad debt, charitable care.
So you'd get $100 million?
The estimate was 50.
And to be fair, this is all of the hospitals in the states collectively, not Greg Bell, not any one hospital,
exactly.
Not IHC, everybody together.
But here's the main concern. And that is that we're talking about 63,000 Utahns in the famous donut hole. Everybody who earns over 100% of the federal poverty level either gets employer-backed issued insurance, or they can go to the federal exchange, healthcare.gov, and get very heavily subsidized insurance.
Cadillac insurance for 2% of their income.
The and so care. Right. Everybody but the working poor. We have 62,000 Utahns. Now, my concern, apart from hospital financing and politics and the speaker, whatever, was enough consideration given to these people? I mean, was the human element, Senator Wyler, was the human element considered by the Republicans?
You know, I wasn't in those meetings because I'm in the Senate. I know that Dr. Ray Ward, who's now a representative from Bountiful, he was bringing these Medicaid patients in and introducing them to the speaker. And so I think I can't say what, 40 different legislators were thinking, but I think that that was presented as part of this package. Whether that carried the day, I think, is pretty obvious.
Well, and I know we can't talk much on this. I think a very profound thing happened, and it is part of the broad picture we've been talking about in Washington. Last February, the Koch brothers decided they're going to open up offices here. There are 3 offices. I saw Utah County representatives who showed me the mailers that went out from the Koch brothers to their constituencies. They had town hall meetings at the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity. So you have these two billionaires, each worth more than $40 billion, coming to Utah, opening offices, threatening Utah representatives, talking to their constituents, sponsoring town hall meetings to get these legislators from conservative districts on the record as saying they're not going to help Medicaid or pass it. And what did you end up with? You ended up with something pretty despicable, where these billionaires from Kansas are yanking health care coverage from the most desperately needing, in need of health care coverage, poor Utahns. It is a sad, sad day for Utah.
I don't know that they moved the ball. They came in late to the game. This place was already frozen.
Everything Jim said is true. They were spending money here. But, I mean, the House caucus only had 7 votes, not the 38 that they needed on Monday or Tuesday, whenever it was. But I don't think the Koch brothers. And what I do want to say is George Soros is doing the same thing on issues.
He's not. I wish he would.
From the left.
Send it to me, George, because they're getting nothing.
Somebody told me that Americans for Prosperity were born on third base and thought they had a triple.
Yeah. There's some truth to that. And let me tell you, there were more lobbyists on Capitol Hill the last 3 years pushing for Medicaid expansion than there were lobbying against it.
Yeah,
By far. Not even
close. All right. Let's move to education. Utah is just burning in terms of its recognition, its listing, its prestige in business magazines. We had a list the other day. I can't remember the magazine. And of the top cities, we had Provo, Logan, Ogden, Salt Lake among the top 6-7 cities. Utah's among the top 10 in this and that list. It all goes to workforce. It all goes to a pretty highly educated citizenry. Are we investing enough in education? Do we have a strategic plan to get there?
I'll start off and say per pupil spending is all you ever hear from the teachers union and from the PTA, and we are always going to be low in per pupil spending because we have large families, we have a lot of federal land, 67% of our state that we can't tax, and we have a lot of stay-at-home moms, which actually helps us with a lot of our educational needs because that's the number one factor. Not stay-at-home moms, but two parents in the home. And so, you know, part of it is cultural. So even if we doubled our spending on education, we're still not going to be in the top 25. But if you look at states' overall budget, their state money, and how much they dedicate to education, we're in the top 15 states. We are. And Jim's shaking his head no.
In terms of percentage?
Yeah. So of our state money that we have to allocate, we can't take unemployment compensation and spend that on education. So of our state money that we collect, we spend about 61 to 63% on K through 12 and higher education, which puts us in the top 15 states in terms of where we're allocating our resources.
I got to have a little time for Jim.
Okay, I'm not going to argue about that, but if the prosperity is so good, if this is as good as it gets, if Utah's on top of every Fortune magazine cover as the place with a great economy, and I admit it is good if you're a Fortune 500 company. I don't know if it's so good if you're a wage earner, because while we may be on top on unemployment, we are somewhere around 37th or 8th on wages. So let's start moving toward working people and not the great gods of Wall Street and pleasing them. Let's get on the list of the top 10 places to have a job in Utah and not be...
Maybe that's why 45,000 Utahns were not able to pay off their payday loans last year.
45,000. If you think that just throwing money into a broken education system is going to magically transform it overnight, you're wrong. And I'll give you a case in point. Washington, D.C., they have one of the highest per pupil spending rates in the country. And nobody from Utah would want to put their kids in that school system.
Okay. We are down now to the fun time of gripes. Let's start with you, Senator DeBacchus.
Well, I do want to talk about, I'm going back to Medicaid expansion. And just say how deeply disappointing it is to be totally locked out, the Democrats. The Democrats in the Senate represent 500,000 people. We weren't allowed a voice. We weren't allowed a vote. We weren't allowed an opinion. While the smug Republicans decided to fix it all, and we have people that are going to die as a result.
Todd?
My gripe is politicians that don't walk their talk. You got Kevin McCarthy, who wanted to be a majority leader, who's apparently ostensibly having an affair with another congresswoman. You've got Justin Miller, who was elected when he had already pled guilty to shoplifting and had apparently embezzled money from Ben McAdams' campaign. I understand that people are dishonest and people make bad judgments, but why do they run for public office? If you've got those type of skeletons in your closet, don't file for elected office. I'm not perfect, but I'm not breaking any laws other than maybe speeding.
Great point. Anything else, Jim?
No, I agree with Todd. You know, if you better have a pretty circumspect life if you're going to get into politics, because word gets around.
Yeah.
And
you become a target.
There's really only one sin in politics now, and that's hypocrisy.
Hypocrisy.
Right? And you can be anything, have done almost anything.
And it's everywhere, Republican, Democrat, everywhere.
No. That's
it's,
right. And isn't it amazing people go down over a $6.50 lunch that they hide or something?
Yeah.
You know, my gripe, I'll just finish with this one, is that I think the legislature needs to get leadership in the education community with whom they can have a conversation, whom they trust. And I'm not saying it's not these guys, whoever's are the incumbents, but we are not getting a good education system partially because we don't have a good dialogue between the legislature.
That's absolutely
and
true.
Hey, we're just delighted to have been here. This is Greg Bell with Senator DeBacca, Senator Wyler. Thank you for standing in on both sides of the aisle.